So here's what I'm going to talk about. I'm sorry, I guess I have to say I don't have any financial interest in this material. But so I figure that if you folks are not that familiar with Micronesia, I will give you a little bit of a brief geography lesson. I want to do in the interest of what Paul Farmer urges upon us to think geographically wide and historically deep. I want to give a little bit of an abbreviated post-World War II history of the region. I want to talk a little bit about Micronesian folks living in Hawaii. And the focus of this presentation is about this Basic Health Hawaii, which was a very inadequate insurance that replaced Medicaid for the Micronesians in Hawaii for a period of time. And then the struggle to try to overthrow, the successful struggle to actually overthrow Basic Health Hawaii, and then what lies ahead. Okay, so a brief geography lesson. I'm told that if we use the pointer that it'll show up on the recorded session. So here we see Hawaii, and I'm going to focus mostly on Marshall Islands and the Federated States of Micronesia. And you can see that if we superimpose the U.S., that it's actually quite a long distance. From Hawaii to the Marshall Islands, it's a good 2,000 miles, and it's further, obviously, to the rest of Micronesia. I do want to point out all of Micronesia is actually north of the equator. And so even in Hawaii, people talk about people from the South Pacific. Well, it's actually a sort of north Pacific, Western Pacific. So the Federated States of Micronesia is actually made up of four states, Kosrae, Pohnpei, Chuuk, and Yap. And the vast majority of folks coming to Hawaii now from the Federated States of Micronesia are from Chuuk in the most recent immigration patterns. So I'm going to back out again to all of the Pacific Islands and then point out where the Marshall Islands are, actually, as I said earlier, 2,000 miles from Hawaii, made up of two island chains. The largest atoll in the world is Kwajalein Atoll here. So an abbreviated post-World War II history, and I'm going to focus mostly on the Marshall Islands. After the end of World War II, all of Micronesia was entrusted to the U.S. by the United Nations as the Trust Territory of the Pacific Islands, or TTPI. And during the period from 1946 to 1957, there were 67 nuclear devices that were tested in the Marshall Islands, the largest of which was the 15-megaton Bravo test of March 1st, 1954. And, you know, the prevailing winds across the northern Pacific go from the northeast to the southwest, but on this day, the winds at the level where the mushroom cloud went up, the fallout actually went to the east. And so from Bikini Atoll, where the device was set off, over actually populated areas of the Marshall Islands, Rongelap and Utrecht having significant populations. This was the Bravo device. It was actually an experimental device. It was actually only the second thermonuclear device that the U.S. had tested. And you can see its size. It's not really weaponizable in this size. And it was actually, this whole coating was actually uranium-238, which wasn't expected to undergo fission, but it did. And so it was extremely dirty because it was about a ton of uranium-238 surrounding this thing. So immediately after the Bravo device was set off, the U.S. government, the U.S. military, initiated Project 4.1, which was in the planning documents from the fall prior to, it was March 1st, 1954, that the device was set off. And so in the planning documents from November of 1953, there was a plan to study the response of human beings exposed to significant beta and gamma radiation due to fallout from high-yield weapons. And in the subsequent years, the people of Rongelap and Utrecht were studied by the Atomic Energy Commission, followed by the Department of Energy. And these, a lot of the planning documents for these basically human radiation experiments were available for a time online during the sort of open information era during the Clinton administration. So plans to expose some of these subjects to even more radiation without their knowledge and without their consent. And the rest of Micronesia during this time was largely neglected through the 1940s and 50s. During the 1960s, there was increased federal aid for infrastructure and government services. The district governments became the main employers in these districts, and there was the growth of a cash economy. So the Trust Territory of the Pacific Islands was dissolved in the late 1980s, and the Northern Marianas became much closer to the U.S., and three nations decided to ostensibly go independent, and so the three compact nations were formed. One was the Federated States of Micronesia, the second, the Republic of the Marshall Islands, and the third, the Republic of Palau. So Micronesians from these compact nations are allowed free entry into the United States without a visa, and they have the right to employment and don't have to go through INS or ICE, I guess, now, and there's no health screening requirements. In return, the U.S. continues to have strategic control over the entirety of Micronesia, and the U.S. continues to utilize the area for to test weapons systems. So this is the Ronald Reagan Ballistic Defense Test Site. I mentioned earlier that the Kwajalein Atoll is the largest in the world, and so the largest and nicest island of Kwajalein Atoll is taken up by this ballistic missile defense test site. It was being used to test intercontinental ballistic missiles, now for BMDS. And it's run, as you might expect, by a consortium of major defense contractors. And, you know, when I'm in the market for an extra atmospheric kill vehicle, I always look for the Raytheon label. Also, the people of the compact nations sign up for the U.S. military in quite high numbers, very high in relation to their population. The recruitment is very heavy there. And given the state of the economy, there's a lot of uptake. So as of last year, the Federated States of Micronesia had suffered more casualties in Iraq and Afghanistan per capita than any U.S. state, and has lost soldiers at a rate five times that of the U.S. average. So noted authority on all things Micronesia, Father Francis Hazel suggests that perhaps the larger issue is whether life in remote atolls remains viable in today's world. So obviously, when you have atolls that are really only a few meters above sea level, it's very vulnerable to high waters, global warming and rise of ocean levels, as well as swells. And so there have been washovers of Majuro in the Marshall Islands, some of the outer atolls of Chuuk, which actually ruins the taro crops. And once you have saltwater intrusion into that area, it takes 5 years to recover. So there's an estimate of 12,000 Micronesians in Hawaii. I'm going to go a little faster, I guess. I was supposed to be going fast already, but okay. So we find that there's been this sort of media about Micronesians, and under Republican Governor Lingle, the Director of Human Services suggested that Micronesians who are unable to support themselves can be deported. And so during the contraction of the economy, I think what we have in Hawaii is some examples of what Naomi Klein calls the shock doctrine. During 2009, Hawaii had the shortest school year in the public schools. And this figure is bandied about quite a bit, that it costs the people of Hawaii, the taxpayers of Hawaii, $101 million to support the compact migrants. So in 2009, the administration announced that it was going to take away Medicaid, put people on this very inadequate program where you got only 12 outpatient visits per year and 4 prescriptions per month. Now, I'm a primary care doc, but when you talk about, let's say, you know, people that are on dialysis or people who have cancer, try to take care of that kind of patient on 12 outpatient visits a year, 4 prescriptions a month. It's impossible. And so we struggle with that. And there was a suit brought by the Lawyers for Equal Justice and pro bono lawyers from these two law firms, challenging Basic Health Hawaii on the basis of the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which states that no state shall deprive a person of life, liberty, or property without the due process of law. So, I'm just a doc. So, for me, it was like, well, why don't we appeal to, say, like the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which says that guarantees a right to medical care and care in cases of sickness, etc. But so it turns out that that doesn't hold water in the U.S. courts. So this was the suit in federal courts, and federal judge Michael Seabright, after about 6 months of people being on Basic Health Hawaii, put out this injunction because, quote, plaintiffs will suffer irreparable harm because they would be left without adequate medical coverage, which will force them to pay for treatment on their own or completely forego the treatment. So what's happening now, actually, is that the new governor, Abercrombie, the new Democratic governor, who had been one of the most liberal members of Congress, is actually now appealing the Judge Seabright's decision up from district court to the circuit court, which, you know, I think for us, for many of us in Hawaii, has been sort of an inexplicable move on Governor Abercrombie's part. So the struggle sort of continues. Now, I think what the whole deal shows us is that, as Cornel West suggests, the United States were founded on three pillars: racism, imperialism, and democracy. So Cornell suggests that we have to try to extirpate as much as we can the racism, the imperialism, and try to foster the democracy. And I think the whole Basic Health Hawaii struggle has been heartening in a way, because it does actually show that democracy and the law does work for us in some cases. Now, I want to close by saying I think what I've tried to do here is, as Farmer suggests, and give you the sort of transnational logic of how these sorts of things work. Look at this issue from a geographically broad and historically deep basis to sort of demonstrate just in what way how we are all tied together. But I think the other thing that Farmer suggests in Pathologies of Power is that we have to do all we can to bring all of us under the rubric of human and therefore deserving of human rights, including the right to health care. Thanks very much.